Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Richard Price has been described as the premier chronicler of life in urban America. He's the author of the novels Lush Life and Clockers, which Spike Lee adapted into a movie. Richard has also written for one of the best television series ever made. You know which one I'm talking about. That's right, it's The Wire. Richard's latest novel is called Lazarus Man. It inspired a tragic true story that happened in East Harlem. A gas explosion caused a five-story tenement to collapse into a fuming pile of rubble. Richard's prose is exhilarating. His characters come across as real people. One of the main characters is Anthony Carter. He survives the explosion. The traumatic experience transforms him into a man with a message. So why did Richard decide to write Lazarus Man?
You know, I had moved to Harlem and I felt like I wanted to do a panoramic novel that takes in Harlem, not historically, but in the moment.
And this is actually something that really happened, this real-life building collapse. Why did the building collapse and how many people were injured and killed?
5, 6, 7, I don't know for sure. It just happened 20 blocks away from my house, and I could feel the bright vibrations of the collapse in my jawline. And I just made my way down there post-collapse. I didn't know what to do with that at the time. I didn't think of it as like, aha, now I've got, you know, the center of my book. It just stuck with me and it evolved.
I can see why that would be the case. I've read that when you sit down to write, you start with an inciting incident and that the last thing that comes to you is the plot. How did this approach affect the way you wrote Lazarus Man?
Plot to me it's not an afterthought. That would be too glib, but I'm interested in a situation in which you can ride that situation like a horse through a very complex geography and pull everything in the course of investigating that incident, or how that incident impacted people from all different walks of life. People who've never met each other will meet each other because of it. What's the rest of their day like? What's the rest of their biography like? You know, I just need something to pull in like a magnet.
The first character that we meet in Lazarus Man is Anthony Carter. And I would think it's fair to say, describe him as the protagonist of the book. Can you tell us about Anthony?
Yeah, he's a lost soul. He's early middle age. He's basically had a rough childhood, had a rough father. His father's death triggered an old cocaine habit, which started a tumble. His wife and his stepdaughter left him. He's pretty much unemployable, but he's at the same time, he knows he's better than his situation. And he's just trying to find a way to become normal again. And what brings him to this building collapse is that there's a big and tall men's shop a few doors down, and he wanted to apply for the job of a floor salesman.
Miraculously, Anthony survives the building collapse. How does this change him?
He becomes a Lazarus because he's been buried and now he's risen in the waves of like warmth from people towards this lone survivor. He starts transforming and he just finds himself. He becomes a teacher. I wouldn't exactly call him a prophet. He has a full heart now for the first time in decades, and he wants to share with everybody.
Mm-hmm. All of your characters and dialogue are very interesting and seem so authentic. How do you make that happen?
Well, Jimmy Breslin, writing an autobiography of Damon Runyon, said he did what all good reporters do. He hung out. You know, listen, I have an ear. Some people have natural speed, you know, on a track. I happen to have a good ear. Plus, you can't write a book like this and stay in your room. Because every day I leave my house, there's something, someone, there's a small revelation out there. And over 18 years of accumulated small revelations. And, you know, you write, I'll write notes. And when I actually start writing the book, I don't even consult those notes. Because if I can't remember that, it didn't stick with me. If it sticks with me, it's important.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You must do a lot of hanging out then, right?
I enjoy that a hell of a lot better than sitting and writing. Mm-hmm. Nothing worse than a blank page. No, it's my social life, you know, walking out of the house.
Yeah. Spike Lee adapted your novel Clockers into a movie of the same name. What did you think of the film?
I thought there were very good things in it, but if I expected to find my book, it was certainly not, nor was it supposed to be. I had problems, but I also admired some of it. I mean, James Cain once said, who wrote Double Indemnity and Postman Always Rings Twice, and they said, what do you think of what Hollywood did to your books? And his response was to point to his bookshelf and say, they didn't do anything to my books. They're right behind me.
David Simon also used your 1992 novel Clockers as inspiration for the hit series The Wire. And he said that you are a vacuum cleaner when it comes to any world you're trying to create. If you're writing about cops, they are the realest cops ever. How do you manage to pull this off?
Well, I just listen and I watch, and you never know where it's going to come from. I mean, to me, the street's like a casino, and I'm a degenerate gambler. Mm-hmm. You know, I will stay out there until I'm broke.
Mm, yeah. You worked as a writer for The Wire. How did that compare with writing novels?
First of all, it was not my creation. It was, you know, David and George Pelicanos. And I was just watching the show like everybody else and loving it. And in fact, when they asked me to write for it, I was a little scared because I imagined that they thought Clockers was only the tip of the iceberg and I had so much ice below the water surface to offer that I just gave everything I had to Clockers. What was good is that I realized, oh, it's called imagination. That's right. It's not a newspaper. It's called fiction. Make things up. Mm-hmm. Lazarus Man is different than anything I've ever written because as my life has evolved over the last 20 years, I just want to write a calm book about people doing whatever they do in life. I don't want titanic revelations. I just wanted to write about human beings because I kind of felt more like a human being these last 20 years without anything chasing me. Mm. And I think it reflected in the tone of the book.
Yeah, that's good. That I'm glad to hear that the last 20 years you felt like a human.
I feel like more centered than I ever have. You listen, we never know who we are, but I just feel at peace more. Mm. I don't wake up, you know, freaking out. I don't wake up instantly having an anxiety attack. I don't go to bed and think, I hope I could sleep tonight, you know, because, you know, there's a whole circus going on in my head. But the only word I could use is centered. It's just been an evolution.
Yeah. You write some very funny sentences, and the one that really knocked me out was this one. Reading the Times on the subway is like trying to spread your arms in a phone booth. Did that just pop into your head fully formed, or did you have to do some rewriting?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah? You know, it's a practical consideration in life. You know, at my age, I have such a reservoir of experience and such a reservoir of self-reflection and reflecting on others that I probably feel like I need to leave the house a hell of a lot less than I need to. Mm. It's just a habit. And it's a habit. It's a social life, and I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's too bad. You're not leaving the house as much in terms of interacting with people.
It doesn't do anything for my tan, no.
Oh. But I mean, people must, because I would imagine you're such a detailed writer and such a good writer that when you go out, the people you're talking to really enjoy conversing with you.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're talking to people, they're telling you things. You tell them things.
Right.
You know, I don't have a notepad. I'm not interviewing it. Sometimes I don't even know what's going to happen or who I'm going to meet or what we're going to talk about, you know, and it's just kind of like the world unfolds minute by minute and people are endlessly full of surprises. Mm-hmm. What they considered like a casual observation is kind of like thunder and lightning sometimes. I say things that I can't hear others can. Mm-hmm.
Very well said. What was the biggest challenge you faced while writing Lazarus Man?
The biggest challenge, you know, was insecurity, feeling like, can I do this? Not knowing where the book was going. I don't write spontaneously. Oh, I'll just write a sentence and follow it with another sentence. Getting to the point where I'm not researching, I'm not interviewing, I'm not studying, I'm not buying background books, I'm writing. And the minute you write, you break the line with ink, it's a different world. But it's a tremendous amount of anxiety. Keep hesitating, because I get cold feet.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That was very, very provocative, what you just said. I really appreciate that. You have been described as a literary urbanologist. Do you think of yourself that way?
No, I think about the fact that I'm literary, and I think about the fact that many writers write about where they are, where they live, where they have lived, because the location is a character unto itself. So in that manner, if I grew up on a beach in Southern California, I'd probably be writing about the beach and the people and the community. If I lived in a mountain area, I probably would have a lot of mountains in my books. I happen to live in New York City, in the Bronx and Manhattan. So I got a lot of Bronx and Manhattan in my books.
Yeah, that which makes total sense. Lazarus Man is your 10th novel. Were you trying to do something different with this one?
Yeah, well, as I said, I mean, I was trying to write something that was less of a propulsive, oh my God, I can't wait to see what happens next. I just wanted to go at the pace of living. As people breathe, I write the things that unfold. Page turners are called page turners because you can't wait to see what's going to happen next. I didn't want to write a book like you can't wait to see what happens next. I mean, you want to know what happens next, but it's not like breathless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that pace of life, and that's part, I think, enhanced the characters, made the characters seem that much more real as well.
Well, the characters themselves, there's this event and how it affects them, but there's their life, not around this event. And not everything that they go through in this book is caused or affected by this event. But it becomes part of what's going on in the assembly line of their souls and thoughts. And
yeah, I love that line. Just bear with me a second. Assembly line of their souls. That was such a great line. Where do you see Lazarus Man fitting into your larger catalog? Does it fit with other novels?
Yeah. It's the same narrative voice. It's the world in which I've been visiting since 1974 with the Wanderers. And you know, it's like you can spend your whole career in one location. Nobody faulted Faulkner for writing about that one county. I mean, not to compare myself, but I mean, the thing that changes in that county from book to book is you. You learn something since the last time. And then you learn something else when the third, you're a different person. Hopefully you're a different person. Otherwise you're a gerbil on a training wheel. Yeah. So this is my latest different person.
Fair enough. Richard Price, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Lazarus Man. It's an incredible novel. I can't wait to read your other novels, all 9 of them.
Oh, thank you.
Richard Price is the author of 9 previous novels. His latest is Lazarus Man. Find out more about Richard Price at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, McLean and Chapman Way, Ripley Johnson, and Richard Price.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
It was created for WPR by yours truly and Adam Friedrich.
I hope everybody out there is having a good day.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Gateway 2000 computer, color printer, joystick, $3,500.
Our executive producer is Brad Kohlberg.
How does it feel being the toughest guy around?
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I probably got 20, 30 emails a day from him.